I was asked to come out to Bahrain, and my job was force protection and political advice. I had no immunity. I was not a diplomat. I was not a military, a government employee. I was a civilian. I made sure that our admirals and our people and our ship captains going out there, I would lecture them and I would explain the truth. Listen, this is a routine game that is played. Don't overreact. And all was fine until 2007. A friend of mine was working there at the Navy base. And I sat down and I spoke to the American Admiral. He said, look, what I'm really worried about is there'll be a miscommunication. Somebody will think that someone's actually going to fire at them. And then we'll start a war. And he said, so I'd like to set up a phone line to the Iranians that we could call and say, look, whatever we're doing is routine. You're going to Washington to propose that. He said, yes. I said, you're going to be shot down. He said, you think? No. Why would they shoot me down? I said, because the people you're talking to want a war with Iran. No. Nobody wants a war with Iran. I said, yes, they do. And these are the same people who dragged us into war in Iraq. They'll do it if they can. And so it all happened as I said it would. The line was never set up. In 2007, George Bush saw that as his last chance to start a war with Iran and to enact regime change. He therefore pulled the admiral that we had there, who was very, very good, back and sent out a new admiral. This new admiral I had known when he was only a captain at the White House. He had one day accidentally mistaken me for an intern and asked me to take out the garbage. And I had looked at him and I said, do I look like a garbage man to you? Well, I didn't see him again until I was in Bahrain. And suddenly there he was, but now he had three stars on his shoulder and it was a vice admiral and my new boss. So maybe I should have taken out the garbage. He said immediately when he came that his agenda was to make sure that Iran was pushed back into a box. In May of 2007, there were the first talks scheduled with Iran and Iraq in Baghdad. And those talks were meant to try to, stop the violence in Iraq. And they were very, very important because things were very bad in Iraq. And we'd caused it. What the admiral did was he decided that he would pick that very week to move aircraft carriers around into the Persian Gulf. Nobody has time to look at ship movements all day long. It's left to the military commanders because it's just nobody has time. Nobody would notice this. The State Department wouldn't notice this unless somebody told them. I want to make sure that nobody in Washington finds out that we're doing this. We're just going to go through there and see what the reaction is from Iran. It wasn't a buildup for war, but it would look like it, and it might make somebody panic and shoot. And all we need is one shot, and then we can just, open fire, self-defense. Even the Department of Defense didn't know. And they came down and they told the admiral, you can do this, but you will tell our Persian Gulf allies exactly that this is peaceful. And as I understand it, we even went so far as to send a message to Iran saying, don't worry about this deployment, it's peaceful. The admiral called me down into his office and he made me sit there while he called the Saudis. Of course, the Saudis already knew by then, as did the Iranians. The whole plan had been foiled. And I was sitting in my office at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, 2:30, and a young lieutenant came in with a piece of paper in a folder. And it basically said that there was a threat sponsored by Iran against American military personnel. Now, this made no sense to me. They wouldn't be taking orders from Iran if Iran were giving them. The admiral called me down to his office. We discussed it. I said, it doesn't make sense. But if it's true, you know, people could die. Can you help us? You're the only person who knows enough people on this island to find out the truth. You'd have no cover or anything, but you might save lives. And I thought, okay, if it saves lives, yes. I'm an idiot. I mean, he fooled me completely, but he knew how I am, and I did it. I didn't meet with the supposed bombers. I met with a man who was a very honorable human rights activist. I said, look, is there a plot? And he said, no, absolutely not. And he said, and if someone even says there's a plot, they're trying to start a fight. Something's wrong here. I said, okay, I'll go back and report that. While we were sitting there, two plainclothes policemen came up to us and they shook his hand and mine, and he went white. Yeah. And they made a joke about how he'd gained weight and he needed to be able to outrun him. When they left, he explained to me that those were men who had tortured him when he'd been in prison in Bahrain. So he said, something's going on here that's very bad. Now, I said, let's all go my way, you go yours. So I came back to the base that night at 10:30 at night, and I used my badges and they didn't work. I thought, oh God, you know, it's not working, the machine. So I called the duty officer and he knew me and he said, come on. You know. So I went in, I typed up the whole report, everything saying, Iran is not planning this. There is nothing going on like this. In fact, whoever reported this is probably up to no good. You need to find out. And I put it on the desk of the head of intelligence and I went home. He came in after midnight. He typed it up and he filed it and he sent it back to Washington without asking the admiral, because the admiral was unavailable. The next morning at 7 o'clock, I came into the office. It was a Friday, so it wasn't a work day, but I was greeted at the door by the head of intelligence. He said, get off the base. Something's wrong. He said, I filed your report. It was one of the best reports I've seen. It's gone back to Washington, but the admiral is furious, and so is the security officer. And I called Commander Chow. I said, what's going on? She said, we have suspended your top secret special access intelligence clearance. I said, why? And she said, that's classified. Now, I said, well, I'd like an explanation. She said, come to the base. And I said, no, you come to me. She said, no. So I was completely confused at this point. I called my friend who was at the base, and I said, I need you to go find out what's going on. He went, and he went to speak to the chief of staff, and he found a letter, which I have, dated December 13th, 2007. It is prepared by Commander Chow. It suspends my top secret special access clearance. It tells me my badges have been deactivated. And it says that all my colleagues have been notified. They sent the Bahraini police to that village, and they were waiting for me to drive in there. And I was going to be either arrested or killed. If I were arrested, they would pull out this letter and they would say she was actually a spy for Iran. We had just informed her that we were suspending her clearance, and she was going out to plan a terrorist attack with Iranian-backed people. That would justify a war. The other option would be that I would be killed. In which case they would say, the Iranians killed an American in Bahrain. And that would be justification for attacking Iran. Those are the only two options I can think of. They tried to hide the letter. They did not let me have it, but my friend had seen it. I fought for 3 months. I finally got the letter. By that time, I was in Australia. But in the interim, I got a lot of support from all my colleagues. But nobody would, the lawyers, no one would talk to me about anything. They wouldn't give me any answers. I came to Australia just to try to figure out what had happened for a short visit. And while I was here, one of my other, I had a company, I was a contractor, it was my own company. My other client was a Turkish billionaire. And he said to me, I will pay all your bills, don't worry. So I got here in January 2008. He transferred money for me to pay my lawyers, which was a lot of money. And he was found shot dead on the sidewalk in Istanbul 2 days later. And they ruled it a suicide. But there was no note. It was a Saturday afternoon on a sidewalk. Who kills themselves like that, in a place like that? Yeah, I got an email saying, sorry, he's dead. Yeah, these people don't mess around. They wanted war, and they want war now. It'll be you and me who will die, and our families and babies, if there is a war like this. Financially, they ruined me. We just bought this house. As I said, we moved in 3 weeks ago. But, you know, I know that they have gone out of their way to stop me from getting work. I know that they have called people and told them not to interview me. I have had the FBI show up on my doorstep undercover and try to lure me to the embassy. There's a very high cost, but I'm very positive about it. And I'm just one person. I can't change everything. I find it almost too arrogant to be upset about the fact that I was unable to stop the Iraq war invasion, because, you know, who am I to stop a war? I'm not, shouldn't be that powerful. But I knew how few people were running it, and just no one would listen. So I felt that I did have that ability, and I failed. But, you know, you win some, you lose some. Free press is really hard for the people who carry out these conspiracies. Because when they see that actually, you know, in the media, that we're all normal people. I respect, you know, the Jewish faith, and I respect the Buddhist faith and the Hindu faith. People are people. It's what they do. It's not how you label them. And there are no organizations that can fix this. Only people can fix it. And if you come out with too much in the media that is against the agenda of these people, you find your satellite connection cut off.